What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
We are now going to turn our attention to Palestine, where four Al Jazeera journalists were murdered by the IDF. We are joined by Samer Arabi, a member of the Arab Resource and Organizing Center, or AROC, who also co-hosts the weekly Palestine Solidarity Announcements every Friday at noon. Good morning, Samer.
Morning, Kat. Great to be here, as always.
Good to have you. Sucks that our topic of conversation is what it is. Samer, the IDF has claimed responsibility for the murder of four Al Jazeera journalists. This is part of an ongoing strategy of Israel in a failed attempt. I think it's safe to say it's a failed attempt to silence the horrors of what is happening on the ground in Palestine to the rest of the world. As you know, Samer, in my political and spiritual tradition, we say the names of those murdered, stolen by the state. I believe we would say that these four journalists were martyred. I'm wondering if you can say their names for us and talk a bit about who they were and the types of reporting they were doing. You just walk us through one by one, please.
My apologies. Was still on mute. I think martyred is, of course, the right word, right? And these people, all of whom have such an incredible story and such an incredible legacy that there's so much that I'm sure we don't have time to get into. But to say, Anas al-Sharif, the chief correspondent for Al Jazeera in Gaza, right after the systemic targeting and attempted assassinations and or horrific bodily injury on previous senior Al Jazeera correspondents, right, including Wael Dahdouh, who folks may remember from last year, Mohamed Qreke, who also one of the correspondents who took over from a previous year senior correspondent who was also previously targeted in March, two cameramen, Ibrahim Zahir and Mohamed Naufal, who also, the previous round of cameramen, I think, were hit in a strike in June and July. This one, rightly, I think, has really occupied the world's attention. You know, the horror of it, the blatant and brazen impunity behind it. But it's just the latest in a very long string of now over 200 Palestinian journalists who have been murdered by the Israeli state. And, critically, I feel like it often somewhat gets lost as if, because they're reporting in a war zone, they happen to be close to a bomb going off or something like that. But these are targeted assassinations, right? As you said, Israel has claimed responsibility directly for killing these people. And these are targeted assassinations of journalists in a way that, is a terrifying portent, I think, of what they're trying to keep the world from seeing as they move into Gaza City this week.
Samer, as a communicator and a person who reports on the news, I think I'm too biased to be called an actual journalist, but someone who reports on the news, unapologetic about that. And also as an organizer, yes, I can't help but clock, and I think we've discussed this, and I've definitely discussed this on the show, that Israel's intentional assassination of journalists has actually had an unintended effect and made thousands of journalists or people who cover the news, as the people of Gaza have taken to social media and share their stories. So at this point, the strategy is clearly a failed one, and yet Israel continues to murder journalists. So I think there's two threads to tug on there, right? One is the independent reporting by the people on what they are going through. And then the second thread for you to tug on is that this is a failed strategy, and yet they keep on.
Absolutely. And I think it really speaks to the resilience of the Palestinian people in Gaza. Like, despite this sort of direct attack on anyone who's trying to get the story out, we're seeing a massive proliferation of anyone who possibly can making sure that story gets told, and it's one of the real tragedies, I think, behind all of this was, Anas al-Sharif in particular talked about this quite a lot, this idea, this deep belief that the world just needed to see, right? Once people saw the extent of the horror that was being inflicted upon them, that it would, cause enough of a global outcry that something would be done. And, it's just mind-boggling the extent to which, literally thousands of firsthand accounts are being provided on a daily basis, and that's still somehow not enough to like move the powers that be into like into a position where they're actually willing to cause material changes to this. We're in a time of discursive shift, obviously, and we've seen the sort of Palestine statehood thing come up, which of course we can get into. But I also think, as you mentioned, it's really indicative of the underlying Israeli ethos in terms of how they think the world works and how they think they can get away with things, and this idea of a failed strategy is nothing new. Hello, like, look where we're at, 2 years into this genocide, where Israel is now claiming for the fourth or fifth time that it needs to go into Gaza City to clean out, Hamas residual militant elements there. Like, this idea I think they have that you can chop the head off of something and render it powerless, right? We saw this with the strikes that they conducted against, Hezbollah senior leadership. Similar, the Iran strikes, in the vaunted 12-day war. The thing that I feel like they fail to understand, as a, colonial construct that by its very design has to be sort of top down like that, is that our systems don't work that way, right? Like, you can't, you kill the senior correspondent. That doesn't mean that we lose the ability to tell our stories, right? It in a mass people's movement, there is no head, right? There is no who is in charge. It is all of us collectively working on liberation together, and you can't bomb that out as much as you try, right? And that's, I think, the beautiful tragedy behind all of this murderous violence.
My eyes well up when you said beautiful tragedy. Samer, we've talked about this before, right? Because I think there's a couple of strategies moving forward, right? I think that is, we can say clearly, without a doubt, that Israel's goal is not to cut the head off Hamas. Israel's goal is to exterminate every single Palestinian
Of course.
in Gaza. Yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And then, in terms of the attacks on Hezbollah and also in Iran, one, I think we tugged on a thread before, but I'd love to revisit it. I think that part of the reason that they were doing that is not just about Israel's expansion in the region, but also about trying to destabilize forces that they are clear would come to the support of the Palestinians.
Yeah, absolutely, no question, right? And to isolate as much as possible, to divide as much as possible, and to, this has been a very long-running Israeli tactic to engender state collapse, right? Like, failed states all around them is their goal, right? Not even friendly states per se, but failed states. And so the idea again of, as much as they can, cutting off leadership as that being the primary tactic being used, but again, massive backfire, right? Like, even if you look at just the kind of political discourse in Iran right now, for example, it's gone more hardline than ever, right? And so this idea that you demoralize a people, or you like cow them into submission by killing their so-called leaders, it does not actually engender any goodwill towards you, right? It increases the resolve to fight you, obviously. And so even in those tactics of like broader ethnic cleansing, demoralization, dehumanization, like, we're seeing a massive backfire, right? In a way that, frankly, in a very different order of magnitude, obviously, mirrors a lot of what Trump is doing here, right? It's not that different to like the attempt to silence Palestine advocacy by the, arrest and attempted deportation of Mahmoud Khalid, right? It's like, oh, we identify a leader, we take them off the board, and that's supposed to make people quiet. In fact, it makes them much louder.
That's also why celebrity style leadership does not work. It's a lesson we keep learning over and over again in our movement. Samer, you mentioned that, despite all of the images and videos that have been flooding, our phones, if you will, for almost 2 years at this point, the powers that be fail to act. I'm assuming you mean Western powers and, France, the UK, UE, United States. Macron finally said, he'd recognize Palestinian as a state. And then, there was this conference to talk about a two-state solution. I mean, what do I know? But I think we're way past two-state solution time.
Of course,
Yeah.
two-state solution with an Israeli government whose official policy is, that the entire area belongs to Greater Israel and is the exclusive right of the Jewish people. Like, it's an absurd attempt at, again, a microcosm of broader political forces that we're seeing in this world, right? This neoliberal sense of like, okay, things got really bad for a minute, but can we just bring it back to where it was? Can we just take things back to where they were 5 years ago, 10 years ago? This is the Democratic Party platform, basically, right? And the unwillingness to acknowledge that that world is dead, right? That those systems have failed, that the two-state solution was never viable, and this willing or willful ignorance, right? To pretend that what's happening now is an aberration from the norm and not the logical consequence of, these sort of colonial systems being imposed on a world that fundamentally, almost in its genetics, right, rejects it. So, it's meaningful, of course, that, European states and other Western countries are about to recognize Palestinian statehood. It's not nothing, it's a long-standing goal in Palestinian advocacy broadly, but it's also largely performative, right? Like, if European countries actually wanted to do something about the starvation, to do something to stop the new assault on Gaza City, they can, right? They have so many material tools available to them, but instead they're sort of, falling back on this discursive element of like, okay, let's, recognize a Palestinian state that won't exist and can't exist because we continue to provide arms and economic support and political cover to the military and political forces that are making that reality impossible. Like, you can't have it both ways.
Summer, our time is short, but I want to get your reaction to this. When I, started to prep this morning, 6 whatever o'clock, it was, who knows at this point. The headlines, when you go to AlJazeera.com, they have the immediate headlines, right? The urgent news for the morning. When I logged in at 6 something this morning, it said at least 65 Palestinians have been killed in Israeli attacks across Gaza. Meanwhile, at least 8 people, including 3 children, have starved to death in the territory in the past 24 hours, bringing the total count of hunger-related deaths to 235, including 106 children, according to the Gaza's Ministry of Health. When I click on that same link now, the headlines read, this is just in a matter of 2 hours, at least 81 Palestinians have been killed in Israeli attacks across Gaza since dawn on Wednesday. Meanwhile, at least 8 people, including 3 children, have starved to death in the territory in the past 24 hours, bringing the total count of hunger-related deaths to 235, including 106 children. I just want to give you time for a reaction to that.
I mean, yeah. What is there to say at this point? The horror continues to unimaginable levels. And the starvation piece is something that, at least is starting to get the world's attention, but it's too late. It's too late in such meaningful ways that, 200 people who have starved to death, the implications of that is so much broader than the people who have already died from starvation. Like, this level of acute malnutrition, acute severe malnutrition, is irreversible. It's irreversible. And that's the thing that I feel like folks, don't fully grapple with, and really gets to the heart of the underlying genocidal mania that is pushing all of this forward, right? That the reason that the alarm bells for famine have been going off for 6 months, for a year now, the ICC war crimes warrants about forced starvation were from early last year, is because that needs to be caught early in order to do anything to intervene against it. We're at a point now where the malnutrition is so high. I used to work in aid coordination before coming to the Bay. You can't give those people regular food. If you give those people regular food, they die. Right? They require like special ICU treatment. We're talking about thousands upon thousands of people who obviously can't get that treatment because there are no ICUs left, right? There are no hospitals left. We're talking about babies who can't be fed because their mothers are starving, who would otherwise resort to formula. Formula is being banned, right? Even when aid gets in, no baby formula is allowed to come in with it because the Israelis are banning it. Like, we're living in a moment of such unimaginable horror that, good, right? The world is finally starting to wake up. Good. Finally, we're seeing politicos and political leaders and various states start to do something about it. But, in terms of the response versus the scale, we're nowhere near where we need to be. We're nowhere near where we need to be. And this feels like a moment more than any other moment where we need to do everything we can, every possible thing we can, to stop it from getting even worse, and the Block the Bombs Act in Congress is a key piece of that. The like arms embargo work that's going on more broadly is a key piece of that. Making sure that there is no platform for the genocide and its apologists in this country is also a key piece of that. But I've never felt more called on in this moment, to do something. We all need to be doing something.
That's right. Yeah, I often say, we can't, we don't and shouldn't all be doing the same things. Not everybody needs to taste tear gas. It tastes like crap. But you do need to find what makes your heart sing and do that. You must do something. Samer, it is always a joy to speak to you. Thank you so much for your work, for your passion, for your analysis, for your commitment to liberation. I appreciate you, man.
Thank you, Kat. Always great to be here.
Samer Arabi is a member of the Arab Resource and Organizing Center, or AROC, and co-hosts the weekly Palestine Solidarity Announcements every Friday at noon. We will link to how you can join that conversation in the archive of this show. Our station up north, KPFA, has responded to the murder of the four journalists. I'm going to read a statement from our news director, Lauren Schmidt, that she delivered at a vigil last night. Our colleagues are dying. Our colleagues are being killed. Our colleagues are being murdered. As of August 12, 2025, the Committee to Protect Journalists, CPJ, has documented 192 journalists and media workers across Gaza, the deadliest period for the press since CPJ began tracking the deaths. At KPFA, we track these numbers daily. I know this count, and like all others, the death count will almost certainly rise by the end of the week, often increasing in real time as we prepare our daily newscast. It is a chilling reality. Being a journalist in Gaza right now is one of the most dangerous jobs in the world. No foreign journalists are allowed into Gaza, placing the entire burden of coverage on local reporters. Israeli forces have even refused to let journalists document airdrops from the air, forcing many to rely on satellite surveillance to track the destruction. Journalists are civilians protected under international law. Deliberately targeting them is a war crime. The CPJ has confirmed that 26 journalists were directly targeted and killed by Israeli forces. Colleagues on the ground have told us many have stopped wearing press vests, believing these now mark them as targets. And the reporters who survive face hunger and constant danger. In July, Agence France-Presse warned that their, quote, last reporters will die, end quote, working under current conditions. As Politico reported, quote, in Gaza, journalism is not just under siege, it's deliberately being starved, end quote. Our colleagues have died not only in the field, but also in their homes alongside their families. Others were killed in vehicles and vests clearly marked press. Some, like Anas Al-Sharif, was murdered while reporting near hospitals or in tents. Many endure the same brutal conditions as those they cover: hunger, displacement, and the irreplaceable loss of their loved ones. Our newsroom categorically condemns the killing and starvation of journalists. Silencing those who bear witness is an assault not only on the press, but on the world's right to know. This is more than a humanitarian catastrophe. It is a crisis of press freedom. For us at KPFA News, this is personal. Rami Almagari has been our correspondent in Gaza for 17 years. He is a widowed father of four. His home has been bombed, and now he is starving. We have sent additional resources to support Rami and his family, but the money we send is useless without food. The cost of flour, once $2 a kilogram, has been inflated by over 5,000%. Other household items like sugar are 10,000%. Rami survives on small portions of bread. Many basic foods like cheese, eggs, and fruit are unavailable. Rami cooks on kerosene stoves fueled by burning plastic since diesel is no longer accessible. When Rami manages to find food, it comes with extreme danger. He works amid ongoing bombardment and destruction. After witnessing firsthand the devastation when his hometown was invaded. Despite all of this, Rami continues to go into the field and supports his family on these limited resources. The emotional and psychological toll he endures is unimaginable and something most journalists should never have to experience. Yet he tells us at KPFA he feels a deep responsibility to tell Gaza's stories because they are the only voices able to. He has witnessed widespread destruction and death, including horrifying hunger-related death, yet he persists. His commitment to journalism and reporting for KPF News is unmatched. After 25 years in the field, he sees his work as his duty. Voices like his offer the only balanced coverage and truth-telling we hear, and which is why they are being punished, targeted, and killed. This is why KPFA News speaks out today to condemn the slaughter of our colleagues in Gaza and to demand justice for those who risk everything to tell the truth and bear witness for the world. Again, that is a statement by our new news director here at KPFA, Lauren Schmidt. Joining us briefly to discuss is Frank Sterling, who's producer of Full Circle on KPFA. Good morning, Frank.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kat.
Frank, thanks for joining me. I got a text from you, Frank, on Monday morning. I believe you were trying to organize a group of us to come together for a press conference and a conversation. But I think things just folded into the vigil that happened last night. What for you, why for you prompted, right, the urge to do something? Why is it important for journalists here? And I think particularly journalists of color to be speaking out against the intentional assault, targeting, and murder, assassination, if you will, of journalists in Palestine.
I feel it's so important because these are the truth tellers. These are the people that are bringing us the information so we can be activated. And I believe that's the goal of the Israeli government, to silence these journalists, especially ahead of this ground invasion that's coming in, so we won't be outraged, so we won't be in the streets. And I feel I'm so thankful for that that statement you just read, because I feel we as journalists out here need to do more. And we should have done more 7 months ago when the Palestinian journalists held their press conference led by Abu Bakr Abed from the Electronic Intifada. They were calling out 7 months ago, and we've lost so many more of them since that time. And again, it's silencing the truth. It will prevent us from getting the information we need to be activated through our hearts, through our vision of what's happening, through their words. I mean, the statement that Anz al-Sharif left in case of his death, it was so moving. And I feel like all these guys probably have similar statements waiting.
Yeah. I Googled this morning. I mean, not that I ever care what that guy says, but I did Google because I wanted to see if some irresponsible, bombastic thing had fallen out of his mouth. But taking note, Trump hasn't said anything about the murder of these journalists one way or the other. I mean, this is national headlines. It's, if you Google Palestine, this is what comes up, right? The murder of these journalists. It's hard for me to think about, you know, exactly that same thing happening here, though, you know, we are barreling towards God knows what with him in power. We have, however, seen Trump attack the media. We have, however, seen him silence the media. We saw him pull funding from public radio. What do you think the immediate years for attacks on our ability to tell truth in this country might look like in a Trump presidency?
Yeah, it's scary. It's another reason we need to speak out. Trump hasn't even spoke out on the American Palestinians mm-hmm. that have been killed. Mm-hmm. So I wrote in that text message and the email I sent out to the news staff and everybody I was trying to contact that these chickens will come home to roost like they always do. If we're watching and not doing anything and letting them kill the journalists that are bringing us this information, arrest them, even hold them in their detention torture centers, this one day will come here. And we're already seeing it. You mentioned, Kat, that they're targeting news outlets. In fact, as many of your listeners, our listeners know, the Pacifica Network is mentioned in Project 2025 as something that needs to be taken out. Okay. So this will come home to roost. Yesterday, the Middle East Eye is reporting, it came out early this morning, about a photojournalist that was arrested yesterday in New York at a gathering to honor the killing of these journalists in Gaza. Now, how ironic is that? When New York police, who get trained in Israel, shut down a journalist here in New York trying to show us the protest trying to honor the journalist killed in Gaza. So it's already here as a form of being shut down. And they're already got their state police in place. It's just another tick of the switch to bring it up to incarceration and death for journalists here. And as someone that walks around with a cell phone and a microphone on a tripod recording stories when I can, it's scary to me that even I have that press pass hanging around my neck, that they can grab me, slam me down, take me into ICE detention, and I might be incommunicado. You know, they towed my car a while back at a protest at Travis Air Force Base, even though I held up my press pass. So, I mean, it's coming back to us, and it will.
All right, Frank Sterling, I've got to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us and for all of your work. I appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you, Kat, and thank you to the news director, Laura, for putting out that statement. I appreciate it. And everybody, be sure to tune in to Full Circle Fridays at 7. Thank you all.
Frank Sterling is the producer of Full Circle on KPFA. As he just mentioned, you can tune in Fridays at 7 to support that show.
You've been listening to Law & Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law & Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law & Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.